You're listening to the Golden West Podcast. I'm Ryan, your host. Join me as I explore the best in food and wine on the West Coast, including California, Oregon, and Washington. We're about to go on a journey, exploring the people and stories behind the vineyards, farms, and kitchens. So grab a drink, fire up your grill, pull up a seat to the table, and listen in. We'll talk about it coming up next. Today's show is brought to you by the hardcore wine dudes at First Bottle Wines. First Bottle is a sister site to the wildly popular one wine per day website Last Bottle Wines. First Bottle is based in Napa, California, and the team is well connected to hundreds of wineries, brokers, distributors, and importers all over the world, and they have spent decades building trust with them. Offering quality wines at unbeatable prices is their top priority. You'll see lots of big names on First Bottle. They've got older vintages, collectibles, and approachable daily drinkers from every major wine region. They taste over 50,000 wines a year and know how to pick a winner. So visit firstbottlewines.com and use promo code GOLDENWEST at checkout for 10% off your first purchase. That's promo code GOLDENWEST at firstbottlewines.com. Today's show is brought to you by Kova Coffee. Kova is a specialty roaster out of Portland, Oregon, and they're known for single-origin coffees, and they're committed to long-term, sustainable partnerships with coffee producers. Now, if you're like me, I love coffee. I always start my day off with a cup or two. I make it by hand with a pour-over, but it doesn't matter how you make yours. You can use a pour-over, maybe use a Chemex, maybe you just use a basic Mr. Coffee machine. It doesn't matter, but what does matter is the beans. You don't want those burnt, over-roasted corporate coffee beans that you find in the grocery store, and I don't even bother with that store brand stuff. So here's what you do. I'm going to make it really easy for you. Just go to kovacoffee.com, that's C-O-A-V-A-coffee.com, and use our promo code, GOLDENWEST. You'll get $5 off your first purchase. Do it now while you're thinking about it, and your coffee will show up at your doorstep as soon as you know it. Today on the show, we have Gina Hennen, the winemaker at Adelsheim Winery in Oregon. We're also going to be talking about the 6th annual Willamette Pinot Noir auction, which is going to feature over 90 wines from the 2019 vintage, coming up on August 5th. Enjoy my conversation with Gina. Gina, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great having you here. I've been a fan of Adelsheim for a while now. Just briefly, we were chatting before going live, and you told me how to pronounce it properly, which was great. Sometimes I get pronunciations a little messed up, but for people out there, Adelsheim in the Willamette Valley, you are known for really producing some of the best Pinot to come out of Oregon. There's so many different brands and winemakers, though, which we're going to touch on for this auction. First, though, I think let's just talk about your background and kind of how you got into the wine business.
Yeah, I get this question a lot and never really know how I got into the wine business. So it's always hard for me to really explain the history. So I moved out to Oregon, the Portland area, and I went into a small liberal arts program where I got a degree in chemistry. And my thesis advisor gave me a really nice bottle of champagne. And at the time, I didn't know it was a really nice bottle of champagne. So as college students do, just drank it. And I was like, hey, this is pretty good. And I started getting into wine at that point as I graduated from college and really liked, there's something really appealing about the combination of science, the chemistry that's involved in winemaking, in the process, but also, you know, you're outside and it's creative and there's new problems that come up all the time and it's very seasonal. So I didn't go into wine right away. I actually went and started working as a semiconductor engineer and technician for a few years, both in Ireland and in Dublin, Ireland, and really wanted to just find something new. And so I thought, well, winemaking might be it. And so I spent some time researching it and thought, you know, this sounds pretty great. So my husband and I moved back to Oregon, and then I enrolled in a local winemaking program and then just started working in the industry and loved it. And I really haven't looked back.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. And working in semiconductors, as a semiconductor engineer, were you actually involved in making the chips, or were you doing the designing aspect, or which part?
A little bit of quality control mostly. So I would work on tools that would monitor the uniformity of all of the thin film layers that make up a microprocessor. And then I did some of the manufacturing side as well, so equipment that will actually make the films rather than just monitor the films. So it was all on the manufacturing and development side, not so much on the sort of overall architecture or design.
That's interesting. You mentioned winemaking really having a lot of science and chemistry and those type of things. You mentioned that was something that kind of drew you into it. Was it surprise? What was surprising to you, I guess, or things that you found like, oh, I didn't know about this when you were first learning about winemaking and decided I really want to make a career out of it? Because you mentioned being outside, and when I first started learning more about winemaking, I didn't realize how heavy on the science piece it was, but also blending that really with as an art form.
Yeah, I can tell you one of the most frustrating things early on in my career was not being able to use science to describe the differences that we would taste between wines. So, for instance, at Quarter Mile Lane, which is where David Adelsheim lives currently, but also where the first vineyard was planted, that wine is across a very narrow gravel road from our Bryan Creek estate property. You could hit someone pretty hard in the head with a rock if you had good aim from Quarter Mile to Bryan Creek. And at one point we had the same clonal material in those blocks across the street, and those wines tasted so different from each other. And I remember asking my predecessor, Dave Page, the winemaker at Adelsheim at the time, like, why is that? And I mean, there's just no way to describe. I mean, there's no way to explain why it's different. You just have to sort of accept the fact that they are and get over it. And that was really frustrating to me because, as coming from a scientific background, I really wanted to explain why and understand all the parameters but with wine, there are too many variables really to control or to even understand. And so at some point, you kind of have to just use your experience and your sort of your built up knowledge over, in some cases, decades of winemaking to really like to rely on that to help solve problems and not so much, just purely the science.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's a really interesting anecdote. And you've been in the industry, it looks like, since 2006 when you returned to Oregon. When did you join the team there? And let's get into a little bit about the history of Adelsheim, and then we can get into the Willamette region and just Oregon Pinot in general.
Yeah, I started working for Adelsheim in 2007, and I started as a cellar hand and then slowly worked my way up. So for a while I was a cellar hand. By that harvest, they had made me the cellar master, and then a few years later, assistant winemaker. A few years after that, associate winemaker, and then eventually winemaker, when my boss left to start his own project. So I've been there for quite a while now. I kind of lose track as far as how long it's been, but it's really just it's a wonderful company to work for, frankly, or I wouldn't be there for as long as I have. And our vineyard sites are incredible. And honestly, that is the one, that is a big piece of winemaking. If you have really amazing sites, well, you're the one that gets to use them, and no one else.
Yeah, and let's get into the actual sites and region. Willamette Valley is the largest region in Oregon, is that right?
That's right. That our largest AVA or American Viticultural Area.
Yeah, so largest AVA. Maybe we can just run through, we don't have to run through all of them, but just kind of a general view of the landscape for people who are unfamiliar.
Sure. So Willamette Valley is quite large. It stretches from just to the south and west of Portland, all the way down to Eugene. So if you're on the I-5, which is the main, freeway that runs through that area, it'll take you probably 2 hours to drive that distance if, at a fairly fast rate of speed, if you're going at a good clip. And then it's wide, as you know, there's some width to it as well. It's longer than it is wide. And most of the AVAs are actually clustered at the northern side of that, of the Willamette Valley. So that's where you find the Chehalem Mountains. That's where we are. It's the first AVA that you come to when you're driving out of Portland. There's Dundee Hills, there's Yamhill Carlton, there's Ribbon Ridge, there's McMinnville, and then a little further to the south, there's Eola Amity. And then we're starting to have some additional newer AVAs, like there's Laurelwood District within the Chehalem Mountains. There's the Van Duzer Corridor, and there's the Tualatin Hills. So there's ever more AVAs to help, you know, explore the region and define what those key characteristics are of all those little pockets where people are growing grapes.
Yeah, and that's the really one of the really exciting things about Oregon, as with other wine regions as well, but just exploring the different AVAs and tasting the difference between them. And for people new to the region, I talked to a lot of people, they've had California Pinot, or maybe it's Burgundy, and Oregon Pinot, it's definitely stands on its own. Sometimes I hear from people that it's a little bit more Burgundian in nature. Although, like I said, it's standing on its own and its own separate wine. But is that something you think is true, or you hear from people in general? I guess it's hard to really generalize, but
it is. I mean, it is, you know, it is very Oregonian in style. And I guess if you place it on the world spectrum, it has some of the same ageable qualities as you'd find in good Burgundy, but with more fruit up front. And that is something that we really, I think, is characteristic of Oregon and California. You know, it's this beautiful, pristine fruit quality that sort of leads you into the glass.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it, actually. That's definitely kind of how when I taste it, I really get those fruit qualities, but you still have kind of the earthiness and some of those Burgundian qualities as well. So kind of mixing California with Burgundy in that way. But like you said, Oregonian, and different AVAs are going to be different in those type of things. So we're going to link the website here in the show notes. People can check it out, adelsheim.com. You make a lot of different wines. Are there any you want to pick out or point out? The one I've had, and probably a lot of people see, it's available somewhat widely. I know Whole Foods carries it. It's just the Willamette Valley Pinot Noir, kind of the flagship that you make. But you also do a bunch of single vineyards, even sparkling wines and things like that. Is there anything specific you wanted to pick out? And then we're going to get into the auction. That's kind of
Yeah, it's always difficult to pick out one. I mean,
there's so many. there's so many good ones.
You know, so Adelsheim has been in the Willamette for, you know, we were founded 50 years ago. And so there's not only a lot of wines that we make currently, but a lot of wines in our library, in our cellar that we get to taste. So that's hard to pick one. You know, what I like to do is, you know, work on our single vineyard program. We make 8 or 9 or sometimes 10 different single vineyard Pinot Noirs in a year and one single vineyard Chardonnay. I think there'll be a few more single vineyard Chardonnays as some of our vineyards mature, but that's sort of on a, you know, decide that when it becomes of such quality that we can do that. So that's a holding pattern for now, but have our eyes on that. Most of them are from our estate properties, and we find the little pieces of those vineyards that really are expressive, and that's hard to do. You know, in some cases, that's 100 cases of a single vineyard wine. Occasionally, it's up to 400 for some of our larger properties, but that's not a lot. You know, that's pretty limited. And so most of those only sell through the tasting room and then obviously through our wine club through allocations. So the wine that people would most often see is our Willamette Valley Pinot Noir. We do have another wine called the Breaking Ground, which is from our Chehalem Mountains AVA. So that's a bit more than focused, a little bit more specific and descriptive of the region that the winery was founded in. you know, 50 years ago. So that one is my sort of go-to. I like that one. It pairs well with a wide range of food. And then you did mention the sparklings, and I have to give a shout out to those because those are really fun to make. because it's the same process that you'd make for a still wine, but then there are, you know, you have multiple years entourage aging in the bottle, and then we disgorge them and we add, you know, our dosage. And see, there's times for the winemaker to revisit those wines after they were already in bottle and have the opportunity to sort of, you know, shift them a little bit in one direction or the other. So that's kind of fun. That's a little bit of a, you know, a unique process. So I like making those, and I obviously love drinking them, but the single vineyard wines, the single vineyard Pinots and Chards are really sort of more cerebral. Like, those are the most fun wines, I think, to sort of think through and understand where they're all coming from.
Yeah, no, that's great. And people can definitely check those out. We'll have a link in the website there, in the show notes, rather, to visit the website. Now, I want to get to the auction, which is coming up. Basically, it's a ton of different great wineries, and people can go to the website here and see all of them and interact. It's the Willamette Valley Wineries Association is putting this on. Going to be online on August 5th. And so both online and in person. So now we're lifting a lot of the COVID issues and all that. So things are finally opening up, but people can also participate, you know, online from all over. Talk a little about the wine that you made for this auction, and what it is. This is the Cheers to 50 Years Pinot Noir Auction Lot Number 92, which is the wine that you're going to be participating with.
Yeah, so this comes all from our original planting at Quarter Mile Lane. So this was all grapes that David planted in 1974. David and Ginny planted, and so some of the oldest fruit now in the valley. And it is exquisite. And unfortunately, the rows are so wide, you could literally drive a truck between them, because that's how things were planted back in the early 70s. That's how big equipment was. And so you couldn't pack them any closer, which does mean that we get very little tonnage. We don't get that much yield out of that old block because of how it's planted. And then also, of course, because it's age and because it's unrooted. So we can't make, you know, more than 150, some cases, 175 cases a year from that old block. So we took a little bit of it to make this wine. And so it's pretty special. It has a very long and storied history. The plant material itself is of sort of mysterious origin. David got it. It was supposed to be Martini Selection. Have him tell the story, he thinks maybe the order was fleshed out with something that Charles Coury was calling Coury clone back then. And no one really knows what that was or where it came from. So it is definitely not a clone. It is a selection of something. We're not really sure exactly what, but it's really incredible. And we've actually taken cuttings from that block and put it on, I think now almost all of our estate sites have a little bit of it planted on rootstock. And it still manages to have this quality about it, but then seen through the prism of the vineyard and what that vineyard site does. So it's a pretty neat little block of ground, and we're trying to keep it as healthy as we can so that it will live into the future.
Yeah, that's such a great story. And people can go to the website, willamettewines.com. Also, the specific auction site, willamettewines.auction. So with no .com there, just .auction. And then you can see a preview of all the different labels and wineries that are there. There's many of them that are participating. And to be able to see a preview of some of the wines and things like that, it's all there on the website. We'll have a link in the show notes. I got to taste through this specific auction lot number 92, this wine that you were just talking about, and it was really beautiful to taste through. I noticed how delicate it was and how the flavors to me were, it just kind of delicate is the way I would describe it. how would you talk about, you know, making this wine, use of oak and just different kind of winemaking styles?
So we handle most of our, I mean, pretty much all of our Pinot lots the same sort of way. I mean, there's nothing unique that we're specifically doing to one site or the other to make them distinct. The whole point really is to show the quality of the fruit and where it's grown. Quarter Mile historically has always done really well with some amount of whole cluster. That dates back to when David Adelsheim was the winemaker. He always really liked the kind of spice and the tannins that you get from whole cluster on that site. It doesn't work so well at neighboring locations, neighboring vineyards. And so, you know, we do it where it works. And so this wine does have, usually it's between 15 and about 20% whole cluster year to year. So there is some whole cluster in the 2019 vintage as well. But what I really like about it is how ageable it is. It does have like a, I guess, like a transparency to it. It's not a big, heavy style of Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be ageable, right? And so we try to back off an extraction. We try to pick it on the earlier side so it has lower potential alcohol, because that vibrancy and freshness, I think, is something that really helps wine to age, you know, for decades in some cases.
Yeah, I definitely echo those sentiments, and that's what I kind of got from it too, was a little bit more tannin, something you can age, but it was still drinking beautifully, something you can pair with a lot of different foods, a little bit on the lower end of the alcohol range. What makes you excited for this auction? And obviously this wine was produced in a very small number. I think it was 60 bottles or something like that. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. So what gets you excited for participating in something like this and being able to produce a wine that's really special, you know, specifically for this event?
I would say, first of all, for this particular event coming up, I think everyone, not just myself, is really included to see people's faces again and
yeah,
to be
yeah.
out in public and,
right.
you know, talk to people. And that's, we have so many of those kinds of events throughout the year, which we obviously have not had a chance to have. So it'll be really nice just to start to feel like things are kind of returning to normal, at least a little bit. And then there is also the virtual option that you had mentioned as well for people that can't or aren't able to travel. You know, I think it's a good sort of mix of options for everyone, depending on their particular circumstances. This auction in particular is really fun because it is such a small quantity that we're making, and these wines don't really get made other than that. You know, like, so we do a collaboration Chardonnay lot. So it's our Chardonnay along with another, you know, friend usually in the valley that's making Chardonnay, and that'll never happen again. You know, so it is really mm-hmm. like this one moment in time where you have to, if you find a wine that you like, you have to snap it up because it won't ever exist again.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And for people who want to participate early, there's a preview week, July 26th through the 30th, and of course leading up to August 5th. And like you said, I know everyone is looking forward to get back to in-person events and be able to see people's faces and interact. Of course, as mentioned, there will be an online option as well for people who can't travel over there. williamettwines.auction is the website where people can check all this out. Are there any other brands or specific wines that you've noticed that kind of caught your eye that you're excited about? Any at all, or just kind of the overall event and meeting people and seeing what people come up with?
I honestly try to taste as many as I can when I'm at that auction because mm-hmm. again, I mean, I'm just as curious as the next person who might yeah. be bidding on them. Like, I want to taste them too and talk to the producers and see what they were doing in 2019, see how they handled the vintage, you know, what choices they made. So honestly, I mean, it'd be hard for, it's a lot, right? I think it's 89 different wines.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So at some point, you know, time and palate fatigue will limit what I can do. But it's just such a fun event to be out there in person and be able to just really see a snapshot of the vintage. It's one of the first options, like, first time that people can really, you know, get such a broad idea of what that vintage is going to taste like. So It's a pretty fabulous opportunity, I think.
Yeah, Gina, this was really fun having you on to talk about this. And this is going to be a really, really exciting event. And especially, as you mentioned, for people getting back out there in person, this is probably one of the first wine events that I've heard about where people can actually be in person and interact. And I know everyone's excited for that. Not to mention, like you said, 89 plus wineries, some number around there are gonna be there. So in showcasing just really extra special wines that, like you said, whether it's a collaboration or a certain really distinct block with low yields, so you're gonna be getting something really special. So there's a lot to be excited about. Lastly, I think, you know, we're right here in the middle of July, kind of going toward the end of July here. We're going to be heading into harvest soon. What's on your plate right now, and kind of what's on your mind heading into harvest up in Oregon right now?
Well, so in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start getting out to the vineyards nearly every day. We'll be looking at thinning and what kind of patterns to thin at, how to get to down to our desired yield. So there will be a lot of fruit that will be dropped onto the ground. But it's a good opportunity to see everything and walk through all of our blocks with our vineyard manager, Kelly. She and I have worked together now for, maybe 6 years. And she's amazing. And so that'll be coming up. And then very soon at the end of that, the grapes will start to turn color. They'll go through veraison. And then a few short weeks after that, we'll start picking. So it's going to come sooner than we ever, expect. It always creeps up on us, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to be here before you know it. So yeah, Gina, this has been great. The last question I ask everyone on the podcast is, what are you drinking when you're not drinking wine? It doesn't have to be alcoholic, but it might be.
Water. I'm very well hydrated, but also whiskey. Not necessarily in that order.
Okay, well, you can't go wrong with that. Gina, this has been really fun having you, and there's a lot to look forward to with this. We're going to have the links in the show notes. People can check it out, and definitely you're going to want to get your hands on that auction lot number 92 that we talked about, if you can, as well as the Chardonnay and everything else. So Gina, this has been a lot of fun, and really appreciate you coming on for this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. If you like the show, we encourage you to tell a friend. You can support the show by subscribing to our email newsletter for just $5 a month. Find it on our website at goldenwestpodcast.com. In it, you'll find unique bottles from both popular and undiscovered winemaking talent, among other things. If you have feedback, find us on Twitter, @goldenwestpod, or you can email us at goldenwestpodcast@gmail.com. As a reminder, all opinions expressed by guests are solely their own and may or may not reflect the views of their employer or any other affiliated entity. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be used as a basis for investment decisions or any other advice. Please eat and drink responsibly, and thanks for listening.